It's time!
Hey, Dave, listen up, please.
Sometimes a warrior just has to kind of lay down on the ground for a minute, just stay there for a second and have a good bleed.
But what are you waiting for?
I don't know, something amazing.
Matt, for maybe the win.
Gafford, buckle up! Oh!
Welcome in to the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America. Seth Campbell joined alongside a well-rested Scotty Borderline. Well, sort of well-rested.
I got to bed about midnight last night, so it wasn't too bad.
He says that he's still running off of adrenaline from the game between Arkansas and LSU, which makes complete sense, but we're all a little well-rested. It's been almost a month, Scotty, since we've been on this podcast.
It's been three weeks,
and there's a lot of basketball to talk about right now.
Yes, for sure.
I mean, things that happened since we were gone. Arkansas beat Indiana. Arkansas started conference play, beat Texas A&M, and then a thrilling game, which seems to happen more times than not, in Baton Rouge, and Arkansas doesn't come away with the victory there. Let's start. I just want to start with this. I know it's getting close to a week old, but hey, congratulations to you, Razorback Nation, because that game against Texas A&M, 19,200 people packed the arena, and I will say that was a fun environment to watch basketball in.
Yeah, it had been a while. I think it had been, like, when I got to my seat at Media Row, I sat down right beside you, and we were talking about how long it had been since we'd both been in Bud Walton. It had been like 3 weeks, I think, or since the Tulsa game?
Yes.
I think.
And I didn't even go to the Tulsa game, so it was almost a month for me.
Yeah, so it was really fun getting back in Bud Walton on a Saturday. Arkansas, traditionally, I know under Mike Anderson, I used to have this spreadsheet with Arkansas's numbers on Saturday in Bud Walton under Mike, and they were like 42-5 or something like that before it kind of started going downhill late in the year. And Arkansas didn't play great against Texas A&M, but man, the five-guard lineup kind of changed the game late, and the defense, that group forced, I think, 8 turnovers in like the last 12 minutes and scored just enough late to pull out a win. It was a fun way to start conference play. Arkansas didn't really give that crowd just a whole lot to cheer about. Like, it was kind of a sporadic game. It didn't really have just a ton of flow, and that's a little bit of a credit to Texas A&M. Buzz Williams had that team really prepared. Like, they controlled tempo from the jump. But Isaiah Joe kind of blew it open late with, I think, 3 threes in the last 8 minutes. I think he outscored Texas A&M, or he matched Texas A&M's scoring output in like the last 12 minutes. I think Isaiah had 11 and A&M had 11 too. So it was fun. I love the weekend environments in Bud Walton. I think that's when the opportunity presents itself for a crowd to get really rowdy, because you don't have to worry about, you know, on a Tuesday game, you got work the next morning.
Right.
And so you might draw attendance down a little bit, but on weekends, people can just kind of go full bore, pun intended, but
yeah.
It's always a fun crowd on Saturdays, and this team's played well enough to get people excited. And then the next Saturday home game Arkansas's got is Kentucky, and that's going to be a pretty wild atmosphere.
Yeah, so Arkansas with the 69-59 victory over Texas A&M. Before we move on and talk about the game that happened, like I said, I want to hats off to you, Razorback Nation, for making that a raucous environment. And, you know, Musselman said that he had a guy in from the West Coast, and he said that's one of the loudest crowds that he's been to. And
I will say, he must not have been to a Warriors game during like their,
that is
their
true.
4 or 5 year run. He must have stayed at home for those,
because those could get pretty loud. But I think it's kind of crazy to think about, but Razorback Nation showed up. That was a loud environment, but for some reason, I think it can almost get louder in there. I don't know what makes me think that, but it may have been what you were saying, was there wasn't a whole lot of things for them to cheer about there. But if that's just the beginning, then that's a fantastic beginning. And you can just build off of that with the rest of the Saturday sellouts all throughout the year. I think that this Bud Walton Arena will become a home field advantage for the Razorbacks, for sure.
Yeah, I think Arkansas has got to do its part too during the midweek. You know what I'm saying? Like, they've got to, if not win, they've got to show incredibly well. I think to, I mean, obviously those games are sold out, and I don't have any doubt. There's no doubt in my mind that those are going to be really fun atmospheres on for those sellouts on the weekends. But Arkansas, you know, they, if they could have come away with a win at LSU, that obviously builds momentum going into Ole Miss. If you win at Ole Miss, which looks pretty winnable right now because they scored just 47 points on the road at Texas A&M the other night, looked awful. Brian Tyree was like the only Rebels player that had a pulse in that game offensively. But if you were to win those games, that just, you've got two games at home next week at Vandy and Kentucky. So it, Arkansas just, they've got to continue to give reason for people to get excited. And I think we saw in that LSU game, this team, despite the worst rebounding margin that Arkansas's dealt with in, I think, four decades, I think, since like 81, 82, and getting outscored on second chance points so badly. And I think they overcame a 7 and a 6 point deficit in two different junctures of the second half and still had a chance to win, had a lead in the last minute. It says a lot about the fight in this team. And I think the fans are just really rallying around the kind of the grit and the just the no quit kind of nature of this team right now.
All right, let's get into it. Arkansas versus LSU, 79-77 victory for the Tigers. There's multiple points that you could go back and say, and especially in a two-point game, in any two-point game, there's going to be multiple points that you could go back and say, we shouldn't have done that, we shouldn't have done that. Musselman even said on the post-game interview on the radio, this is one of the things that he really wishes he could have had back, and it's not his fault, but Reggie Chaney's technical towards the end of the first half. Chaney gets a technical. They make both of the technical free throws. That's 2 points. That's a game changer right there. You can't have that in a game.
Yeah, it's not the sole reason that Arkansas lost. Obviously, you can't lose a game on one play in the first half when you've still got 20 minutes to go. But it was certainly a contributing factor, no doubt about it. And Musselman said it after the game that you can't look at just one specific play. But that was obviously a contributing factor. I don't know what's going on with Reggie right now. And I don't know if you wanted to jump into that right now.
Let's go for it.
But he's, through two SEC games, he's played just 14 minutes, and he has been a net negative, big time. His three possessions offensively against Texas A&M all resulted in turnovers. And when he got subbed out of the game, he just kind of plopped down on the bench and looked like he was mentally checked out. His body language, to me, has been awful. And I don't know what the deal is. I don't know if it's got to be kind of a confidence thing. Like, not just a whole lot has gone right. I thought he played pretty well in Indiana.
Yeah.
I really did. He had a nice move along the baseline where he went up and under for a nice finish. And I was like, that's the Reggie that we saw last year, that we were like, if he can have a solid offseason and really buy into what this coaching staff has brought and settle into his role, that he could be like a really, really significant part of this team. But the last two games, you're wondering, you know, is he in his own head too much? He just kind of seems like he's in his own way right now. And I know he does some things very well. One of the things he doesn't do is pass well out of the post. I think one of his turnovers, at least against Texas A&M, he caught, I think, on the left block and tried to find a shooter in the right corner, and there were like two defenders between him and the teammate that he was trying to hit in the corner. So obviously not a good decision there. And then the play at LSU is just like, why? I understand that you're frustrated, but
you can't hit the ball like that.
Yeah, you just absolutely cannot do that. And I think at that point, Arkansas had like a 11 point lead, and then Arkansas just kind of started to see that lead right before halftime kind of start dwindling away.
When they were coming out of the under four timeout, it was 3:07 left, and Arkansas was winning 35-28. And then not long after that, Chaney got his technical.
Yeah, they led 35-24, I think, with a little bit over 4 minutes left in the first half after Mason hit that really deep three.
Yep, you're exactly right.
From the top of the key. And, I mean, it looked like they were pretty much in control. That Mason had it going, and it was kind of stunning. Isaiah, Joe couldn't get anything going at all, but Mason and Adriel kind of fueled that. I think it was a 12-0 run.
Do you think Chaney, I didn't mean to interrupt you there, Scotty. Do you think Chaney's problem is he's pushing too much because Bailey is playing so, I mean, out of his mind, basically, through the first part of the season that, you know, he wants to push himself so he can earn more of that playing time, and he's just not seeing the results like Chaney, or pardon me, that Bailey is in under Musselman?
That could be it. I think he's just, I think he's pressing just a little bit too much. And, you know, when we saw Reggie play last year, I've kind of been thinking about this for a couple of days since the A&M game when he struggled a little bit. Last year when Reggie played well, I don't want to say every time he played well, he had Daniel Gafford on the floor, which is a huge plus.
Right.
Because all you got to do is be a great compliment to him, and it looks like you're playing fantastic. He doesn't have that now, but he's got Adrio. He's got Adrio beside him, and I think if he could just become a great complement to Adrio, and I know those two don't play just a whole lot together, but when they do, I think they could be pretty solid. If Reggie would just kind of get out of his own way and play within himself, you know, he's athletic enough to contest and block shots, and I mean, he's 6'8" and got a great frame. He's athletic enough. He could grab rebounds, block shots, and kind of, you know, Adrio, I think, is one of the best shot-blocking forwards in the SEC right now. I don't think anybody's denying that fact. He had four last night, which was, that last one was freakish. Blocked, I think, Skylar Mays out of bounds.
That, yes. When the game running down, he hovered in the air and just swatted it.
I just think Reggie's kind of got to get out of his own way. And I'm going to be really curious to see when the next time that we get Eric Musselman, I want to ask, you know, what have conversations with Reggie been like since Saturday? And I think if he did have some conversations with Reggie after the A&M game, he has another reason, more reason, to kind of sit down and have maybe like a come to Jesus meeting. Like, we need you. We are so thin along the front line that we can't have you kind of in your own head and in your own way. Arkansas needs really good minutes from Reggie. I want to see, you know, kind of how he responds, what Musselman and the staff's plan is to kind of get him, pull him out of this funk, because they really need him on the glass. And, you know, if Reggie plays like Reggie, then Arkansas, I think he's on the floor a lot more against LSU, and I don't think they get bullied on the glass as bad.
Right. They were going to get bullied on the glass regardless for whatever reason.
LSU has the most athletic front line in the SEC, and they may not be 6'10", 6'11", 7-footers, but those 6'6", 6'8", 6'9", guys, they are quick off their feet, and Arkansas saw that last night full force.
And they find their way to LSU in Baton Rouge somehow. I don't know how.
Will Wade knows how.
Yeah, exactly. We all know how. Just apparently nobody can prove it in court. Okay, moving on. You go into halftime with the score being 42-33 in favor of Arkansas, and Joe has not scored a point. So you're feeling pretty good about yourself right now. If you can get Joe going and, you know, keep Mason Jones where he was in double digits by the time Jimmy Witt was in double digits by this time at the half, you're feeling pretty good. But Arkansas, you know, Chaney didn't play again. Once he picked up that fourth foul in the technical, he sat on the bench. That means you're going to go with Bailey. And if you don't go with Bailey, I think Ethan Henderson got two minutes.
Got 2 minutes, yeah.
So,
two and change. Yeah.
So once you take Ethan Henderson out, you're going with the five-guard lineup, which was pretty successful for Arkansas against Texas A&M.
Yeah.
And then as soon as they go to that five-guard lineup, LSU has three turnovers from four possessions.
Right.
Then they go 207 scoreless. This five-guard lineup is something that I think Musselman can and should use, even if Chaney and Bailey are starting to play better. I think that this is something that just throws teams off, because they create turnovers and steals when they go to the five-guard lineup. They were going to lose the rebounding battle anyway, and I think I saw Musselman's point then of, all right, we're going to see if we can't force into turnovers and then score. And it worked.
Yeah, it did. And I wrote about that after the Texas A&M game, because when Adrio picked up his fourth foul against A&M with 12-12 left, Adrio was standing on the other end of the floor on A&M's in front of A&M's goal, and he was looking toward the bench, and he put two thumbs up. He's like, I want to stay in the game. I'm good. But that's a lot of time for your best shot blocker to stay on the floor, especially when A&M came out in the second half and it was like their game plan was to feed Josh Nebo because Arkansas did not have a matchup, didn't have a match for him. But right after Adrio threw the thumbs up, Jalen Harris runs to the bench. And I'm like, what is this going to look like? They forced 8 turnovers, like I said, in the last 12 minutes. And I think came up with 3 or 4 steals, I believe. So that 5-guard lineup was great defensively. And like I said, they did enough on offense, thanks to Isaiah. He went 3 of 4, I think, in the last 8 minutes from 3. So that was a big plus. Against LSU, you mentioned it. I think there was a 4-possession stretch where they turned the ball over 3 times. That lineup defensively forced 4 turnovers altogether.
And so think about this, too. So we go to the under 16 timeout. There's 15:36 left. Joe hits a 3, and then LSU has scored on their first 8 possessions of the second half. They score on their first 8 possessions with 13 minutes left. Musselman goes to the 5-guard lineup. The next 4 possessions don't result in the score and 3 turnovers in those possessions. And then LSU goes scoreless for 2:07. And the game, once you hit that under 12, the game is tied 58-58. But you just flipped the momentum back towards you because it wasn't working. LSU had scored on their first 8 possessions, like I said, so you needed to change something up. And all of a sudden, you got in the passing lanes, and you were talking about LSU being one of the most athletic front courts that you will see in the SEC. So that, I think that bodes well for this lineup, that if they can do that against LSU, then I think they can do that against other teams as well. Now, other teams might have bigger post players that can maybe post up like a Nebo did against A&M or against Arkansas when he played for A&M. But Arkansas was able to counter that still. So I don't think that there's a way where you can look at this 5-guard lineup and say it's not going to work. I think it's going to work at times. It can't be your lineup all the way throughout the entire game. But if Chaney's going to continue to play the way that he's going to play, then I think this 5-guard lineup is going to have to be utilized.
Yeah, I think we're going to see more of it. The only hitch with this lineup is, for whatever reason, and I think I kind of have an idea of why, but against LSU, this 5-guard lineup scored like 0.3 points per possession when it was on the floor. That is atrocious.
Which is completely opposite of what you would
really
think.
That's really bad because, yeah, when I asked Musselman about the 5-guard lineup against that he used against A&M, he said it was their best rebounding lineup. Obviously, they forced a bunch of turnovers, kind of got A&M out of their comfort zone offensively. But on the other end, Arkansas really struggled to score when that group was on the floor. And I think part of it might be the 5th guard that you're putting in the game is Jalen Harris. And Jalen, albeit that he's shooting much better from 3 this year than last year, opponents probably still aren't respecting his 3-point shot just a whole lot. And Jimmy Witt is not a perimeter threat either.
Hasn't taken one all year.
Yeah, exactly. But his mid-range game has been lethal. Like, he's literally brought it back from the dead almost. I've got it in my notebook. I think he was like 7 of 9. No, he was 8 of 12 on mid-range jumpers.
Jeez.
Against LSU. But yeah, that's the only thing that's holding me up, because I love that lineup. Because you see the tempo of the game change, and I think part of that too is Jalen Harris. And I want to get a little bit into Jalen. He's played really well the last couple of games.
Well, Musselman said that he believes that when Harris is in the game, he's even said it, that the lineup speeds up.
Absolutely changes the pace. Absolutely does. And against A&M, he turned in his first game with 5-plus assists and no turnovers since last January. So I think that was a big moment, a big game. He played 31. So he played starters minutes, played 31 minutes, 5 assists, no turnovers, 4 rebounds.
This is against A&M?
Yeah, gave you 6 points, 2 steals. So Jalen was everywhere. And then against LSU, only scored 2 points, but he, you know, the lone bucket that he had came off of a turnover, went to the other end, finished with a dunk. 2 assists, 2 steals, again, no turnovers. So 7 assists, no turnovers, last 2 games is great. Even going back to the Valpo game, 3 assists, 2 turnovers, but I mean, was that 7, 8, 11 turnover, or 11 assists against 3 turnovers his last 4 games? Jalen's playing pretty well at this point, and I think you know, just him coming into the game. And he's kind of like a one-man fast break. I talked about this with somebody yesterday. Against A&M, there was a point when Buzz Williams kind of implemented a three-quarter court, 1-2-2 press that wasn't just – it wasn't just like all-out pressure, but it was just meant to kind of shave a couple of seconds off the shot clock in hopes of, you know, kind of dialing down Arkansas's offensive efficiency a little bit. But that doesn't really matter when Jalen's in the game. He's a one-man press break. He gets by the guy at the top of the press, gets by the defender who's on the right side of the floor, who's standing at midcourt, and then he somehow just kind of dribbles toward the middle of the lane, and he finds Isaiah on the left wing for a three. That's a half-court possession, but he almost turned it into a transition opportunity just because of his speed. And I think I'm not trying to tell Eric Musselman who to play, but I think Jalen has had a really big impact on the last couple of games, just with his speed. He's got game-breaking, game-changing speed. He's got the ability to set guys up, you know, turn like I said, turn a half-court possession into, you know, almost a transition opportunity.
All right, let's shift now towards the end of the game, this Arkansas-LSU. There's a few things that I want to talk about here. I thought coming out of halftime, if Arkansas could get Joe into double digits, he could get back into double figures and keep everybody else on the court, you know, with Witt and Jones going off the way that they did, I figured that Arkansas would have not only a good chance to win this game, I figured they would win this game. I don't know why, but it's just one of those things where Joe ended up in double digits. He had 13 points. He was hit 2 3-pointers, 4-13 from the field, but Arkansas just got out-rebounded. And I guess I'm going to pose the question to you, I guess, before I teased that we were going to get into the end of the game stuff, and we will. But before we get into that, why was Arkansas just outmanned on the glass this game, Scotty?
I think it's like Eric Musselman said it after the game. They were just – LSU was just flat out more physical. And LSU and Texas A&M have – like if you rewatch the game or if you have watched the games at all, you've probably noticed that it looks like opposing teams have made it a point to drive Arkansas's guards off the dribble. And LSU got into the paint off the bounce whenever they wanted, pretty much. And then you throw up a shot, and then LSU is using its freakish athleticism across the front line and kind of taking advantage of Arkansas's guards, you know, when they don't box out. They're tipping balls around, grabbing extra possessions. I think it's that. Arkansas just wasn't physical enough. And LSU, I think, sent four to the glass more often than not. Trendon Watford is a handful. Darius Days, oh my gosh, that kid can rebound 4 days.
Yeah.
And he, I think 9 of his 16 rebounds against Arkansas were on the offensive end. And I think LSU, according to KenPom, had rebounded 52.3% of its misses, which is, I think, its second best number of the season. So I don't know. I don't know that there is an answer. It's just LSU was more physical on the glass, just took advantage a little bit of Arkansas's lack of size in a way. And that, I think that's pretty much it. Like LSU's just, like I said, their front line is as athletic as any in the league. And Emmett Williams is a freak. You know, Darius Days, I was wondering what kind of an impact he was going to have on this game. And he had like 13 rebounds by the 16-minute mark in the second half, which you just got to, at some point, you just got to put a body on somebody. And if it means picking up a foul because you're trying to send a message, boxing out, then maybe that's what you got to do.
I felt like there was less. I mean, I don't have a stat for this to back this up, but I just felt like there were less box outs than I've seen in Arkansas in the past of people finding somebody else, putting a body on them. And, you know, sometimes guys are just taller and or the ball will bounce weird and they'll get those rebounds. But I thought the effort was there, but they weren't executing the best. I didn't feel like there was as many box outs for Arkansas, and something that they have done really well. I mean, if you go back to the stats here against A&M, which A&M's whole goal was to feed it into Nebo, and Nebo was bigger than anybody that Arkansas had on the court, but rebounds was 27-34 in favor of A&M. So Arkansas was only getting out-rebounded by 7.
Mm-hmm.
it was just a different game. I just felt like the Arkansas in this game did not try as hard on the offensive rebound, or not on offensive rebound, on rebounding in general, and I think that that hurt them.
I think part of it too is, you know, like I said, I think Will Wade made it a point to say, hey, if you're one of my guards and you've got the ball in your hands, attack the paint. That gives us more bodies, because they've got guys just hanging around the rim too. Like, they're getting dribble penetration into the rim, and they've got a big right outside the block on each side of the lane. And then at least one of their guards was going to crash. I remember one point in the game, there's a guy on LSU's roster named Marlon, named Marlon Taylor. He's basically a non-factor on that team, but he is freaky athletic. Like, he's got springs for legs, and they put him in there just, I think, for offensive rebound purposes, and maybe he's a plus on the defensive end too. But you drive the ball into the lane, you've got at least four guys now for LSU who are crashing the glass, and I don't think Arkansas was sending as many bodies to the glass, because, you know, if you do get an offensive rebound, you want to hit an outlet and get a transition opportunity, and Arkansas just flat out got bullied.
Yeah, they did. And they got bullied on the rebounding side. And all right, let's move into game situation here. We'll go to the foul that Jones committed that fouled him out. I don't necessarily have a problem with him playing defense. Some people are saying, you know, why was he all so close? That's how Arkansas plays defense. You have to be up in that guy's grill, or else they are going to get easy shots. And just to go back to what you were saying just a little bit earlier, it wasn't the first shot that was killing Arkansas. You said that, you know, Will Wade made it a point for his guards to take Arkansas off of the dribble. They did, but it wasn't the first shot that was killing Arkansas. Arkansas would defend the first shot well. The problem is most of the time when they took the guards off the dribble, post help would come from Adrio, or, you know, if they were in the five-guard lineup, it would be Witt playing the post or whatever. But that help would come, but nobody would be there for the rebound. And I think that's what killed Arkansas on that. But anyway, Jones, foul. Was it a foul in your opinion?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It didn't really look like it to me. But Musselman said after the game that he thought Mason gambled a little bit on that play, because Watford took Mason off the bounce going left, and right as he was gathering to go up into his shooting motion, he had the ball tucked on his left hip, and Mason saw that and kind of flashed across Watford's face and just kind of went for a strip on with the ball on his left hip and just whiffed, I think. And I don't know, it didn't really look like too much of a foul to me, but we didn't really see Mason
complain about it. The continuation is what got me too. The contact was made at the free throw line with the guy not ready to shoot, and then he goes into a shot. Now, I don't know a whole lot, but I know that the basketball and NBA, or pardon me, the college and NBA continuation rules are completely different. And that looked like an NBA continuation and not a college one.
I honestly didn't have as much problem with Mason's last foul, although I thought it was questionable too. But the foul on Jimmy Witt with 8 seconds left, I didn't, unless he brought his hands down and I couldn't see it and impacted the shot or hit Watford's arm in some way where our view was blocked, I didn't see much on that. But still, he made the shot. So even if they didn't call a foul, LSU's up 1 point with 8 seconds left, and you still got to go get a bucket on the other end to win it.
I think that whistle changes the complete complexion of the game, though, on Witt.
Yeah. Yeah, I absolutely agree, because now I don't know that Isaiah Joe – pulls up for a three on the other end. I think you can give the ball to maybe Jalen Harris and see if he can penetrate, find somebody, or dump it off to maybe Adrio for a bucket.
So, yeah, I think the foul on Witt was questionable. And as a referee, I think you put yourself in a bad situation, because towards the end of the game, if you're going to call those ticky-tack fouls, then you're going to need to call it on both ends, and Arkansas fans don't feel like that they got the calls on both ends. I don't know if the last second game, the opinions are fluttering whether or not it was a foul on Joe and Sills when they were trying to put
I did not see a foul on Isaiah Joe. And I'll go against the grain and say I didn't see one.
I wanted there to be one at times, you know, if you're an Arkansas fan, you wanted there to be one, but I couldn't see it either. Even with my red colored glasses on, I don't know that I could see it.
Desi's attempt, I thought there was contact after the shot, but like Eric told, it's in Bob's story on the site. He was talking to Eric walking back to the locker room after he left the post game, and he said he thought there was some contact on Desi after the shot, but they're not going to call that.
Yeah.
Could you imagine the outrage?
Oh my goodness. They would be so mad in Baton Rouge.
From the really bad crowd at LSU if the officials had whistled a foul on that Desi Sills attempt. You know, that was the more questionable one to me. I thought the Isaiah Joe's attempt was very well defended, and they put a very long guard on Isaiah, and he played him close enough. He's almost like daring him to like try to dribble drive. And when Isaiah rose up, Charles Manning just stuck a long left arm up there, and I thought he got, for the most part, I thought he got all ball. There may have been some contact a little bit,
yeah,
a little bit below the waist, but I thought if there would have been a foul called, it would have been on Desi's attempt after the shot.
I have issue with the last second call. I think I understand where Musselman's coming from, because you're down by two, which, you know, as I said, the Witt foul changes the entire complexion of this game. You're down by two. You got to go the length of the court in 8 seconds, correct?
Mm-hmm.
And so I understand where Musselman's coming from. I'm sure in his mind, I'm not even going to try and get into the mind of Musselman, but from an outside perspective, it seems like, all right, we lost Mason Jones. Adriel Bailey's got 4 fouls. Chaney has a technical, and he hasn't played the entire second half. I have about 5 guys, the 5 guys that are on the court that can play, maybe 6, you know, if I want to. I don't think I want this game to go an extra 5 minutes on the road. So I'm going to try and end this game with a 3. I get that, because I think that you're...
I think that's why you put the ball in Isaiah's hands.
The possibility of you winning this game if it goes into overtime is slim, but there's got to be some kind of better play call than what they did with Isaiah walking it up the court. I mean... Okay, it was like a slight jog that he's going up the court with. Get up the court and do something. You have 8 seconds in this game. Even a play that's become pretty popular ever since it was run in the national title game, the North Carolina. Well,
it
not,
was it Kansas-Memphis?
Well, not the Kansas-Memphis one. This was the North Carolina, is it Villanova game, where North Carolina hit the last shot. And then the guy, you get it into a point guard. He dribbles it up the court as fast as he can, takes on 2 defenders, and just drops it back.
To the trailer, yeah.
I mean, I would rather have that shot with Isaiah Joe, you know, even a few steps behind the 3-point line, taking an open shot rather than him trying to go off the dribble. He hit 1 off-the-dribble 3 in this game, which is 1 of his 2 3-pointers. But Isaiah Joe is just not that great off of the dribble, so I would rather have set up a different play for him than just having Joe semi-dribble it up the floor and shoot. Like, that was easy to defend if you're LSU. You couldn't ask for anything better, because you know that more than likely Joe's going to be the shooter here. And if you don't have that foul and wit, yeah, you can drive. And then that changes the entire complexion of the game too, because like you said, you can maybe have Jalen Harris, or you could set up something for Jimmy Witt like Musselman did towards the end of the game.
Yeah, with right under a minute left. He Isaiah brings the ball up the floor. Mason comes off a stagger screen on the right side of the floor. Get it to him, kick it to him on the right wing. He attacks off the bounce left, gets into the middle of the paint, and then Jimmy Witt comes from the left short corner. It cuts to the free throw line, and Mason just kind of turns and pitches to Jimmy, and he knocks down a jumper.
Beautiful play call. Just absolutely beautiful.
Yeah, I kind of wish they would have gone to something like that, or like I said earlier, put the ball in Jalen's hands and just like create a little bit of havoc and see if LSU wouldn't overhelp and overreact. You know, I think we've talked about it before on this podcast, like in late in games, and it may have been after the Kentucky game or after the Northern Kentucky game when Adriel helped a little bit too much.
The Western Kentucky game?
The Northern Kentucky game.
Oh, the Northern, yes.
Northern Kentucky had a chance to, I think, take a lead with a corner, wide open corner three.
Yep, you're right.
Adriel helped too much. So maybe you dive into that a little bit and maybe see if you can't get a defensive overreaction, leave somebody open for a score. Or like you said, just the play where they got Jimmy an open jumper from the free throw line. He was 8 of 12 on those. And you need 2 points to keep the game moving. I don't know, maybe that's what I would have gone with, but I don't by any means want to, you know, second guess what Eric Musselman was doing, because he drew up, he dialed up two really good plays in the last minute that got Arkansas some big buckets.
Yeah, he dialed up those plays, and I for sure it didn't help that Mason Jones was out of the game. That's a right. weapon that LSU doesn't have to worry about on the defensive end, and that's a weapon that Arkansas can't use. Mason is pretty good at making his own shot. And towards the end of the game, he can step back and make shots. He showed that in this game. He's shown it all throughout this season. Isaiah has been more of a guy coming off of a screen and not off of the dribble.
And the one score that Isaiah had in the last minute when he got the and one to give Arkansas the lead, I think, what was it, with 30? Yeah, it was around 35 seconds yeah. left, I think. And Eric Musselman drew up a fantastic play where the ball high ball screen with Adriano. Isaiah turned the ball screen down, drove left, and then he had Desi Sills empty out the left corner. Mm-hmm. And so that takes out a help side, that takes out a help defender, and basically
Joe was able to lay it off
yeah,
the glass.
Yeah, able to get it off the glass. One. That was a terrific play he drew up right there.
Yeah, Joe put it in with 21 seconds left in the game, and then Watford put his layup and one in with 8 seconds. So 8 seconds. That would be where the timeout in moving the ball up in the like they do in the NBA would have helped Arkansas extremely there, because Musselman could have run a play, maybe get Joe coming off of some kind of screen action or anything like that.
I think he likes opposing defenses to have to guard the entire floor, though.
Okay.
You know what I mean? And I think he can, just like with Isaiah, he had, when he brought the ball up for his and one, he brings the ball up from the baseline and has a little bit of momentum. I think he's got a little bit of speed built up, and I think it catches defenders off guard a little bit when he's kind of coming downhill a little bit. I didn't mind it. I didn't mind that at all.
I just think that with Jones out of the game, that Arkansas needed as little dribbling to happen, because their best playmaker with the ball in his hands is not in the game. And like I said multiple times, Joe's better when he's not off the dribble. He can make shots off the dribble. I mean, he can drive, but obviously the plan here was not for him to drive, or else he should have. It looked like that Joe's defender was baiting him into driving, and I think that Musselman wanted to either win the game or end the game, win the game or lose the game right there at the end by going for the three, which makes sense. But
I get that with considering Arkansas's depth. I really do. I get it, just kind of wanting to stick a dagger on them right at the end of regulations, kind of see if you can't go in there and grab a win.
Man, it was a fantastic game, though, which Arkansas has had some fantastic games in Baton Rouge. It always seems like, you know, there are the games that are the blowouts, but there's close games, contested games, and, you know, that game last year where Arkansas was able to pull out a victory off of a Mason Jones last-second shot was a classic game that Arkansas, you know, Razorback fans felt like that they didn't get a lot of calls. They powered through, and that was one of LSU's two SEC losses for LSU in the conference play. So that's a fun environment to go play in, and I think that this team will learn a lot from this. And I'm going to go out on a limb here, not really, and say I think that the defensive rebounding and just the rebounding in general will be a lot better against Ole Miss.
There will be a lot of attention to that over the next couple of days. That's what I wrote in my post-game thoughts last night. I really like the fight and the grit in this team, because they just kept getting knocked down, whether it was the 26-0 and second chance points, the minus 29 rebounding margin, the 2 second half deficits that got up to 6 and 7 points, and then just answering back on those, on Trenton Watford's and ones with other buckets. I mean, this team is just like really, really mentally tough. May not have looked like it for the entire night, but these guys are just tough in general. This team is just really tough, doesn't have any quit in it. And I would be really surprised if this team is not like rearing to go on Saturday at Ole Miss. I think Ole Miss is a great bounce back opportunity for Arkansas.
Yeah, this is a game that Arkansas can win on the road. And I think that, like you said, it's a bounce back opportunity. Before we go, Scotty, here on the Basketball Podcast of Mid-America, give me a key for Arkansas versus Ole Miss.
Brian Tyree somehow is still at Ole Miss and he's really good. I think Ole Miss scored 47 points the other night at Texas A&M, and Brian Tyree had 26 of them.
Jeez.
So he's a mid 30% 3-point shooter. But he doesn't settle though either. He's taken over 100 2-point looks too. Gets to the line fairly well, but he's their offense. He's taken 32.7% of their shots, so he's like their go-to guy on offense. I think you got to prevent a good day from him, and then maybe kind of limit Devontae Shuler, because Shuler can play too. He's shooting 36% from three as well. I think you can't get bullied on the glass again. They've got, or the Rebels have a 6'10 kid, named Kadeem Sy, who's rebounding 8.4% of Ole Miss's missed shots, and he's grabbing almost 20% of available defensive boards when he's on the floor. So I think it's kind of the keys that the keys are what got you beat at LSU. You just got to clean up the glass a little bit more, continue to take care of the ball. I think Arkansas only had like one turnover through the first 15 plus minutes the other night, which that's how you win on the road. You take care of the ball and limit transition opportunities for the team, for the home team. And, you know, if Mason Jones can keep playing well, he's like, we haven't talked about him like over the last five games. He has been absolutely phenomenal. I think he's averaging close to 25 points a game, and he's shooting 44% from three over his last five games since, you know, kind of the stinker against Western Kentucky where he went 1 of 9. He's been great. Jalen's kind of been flying under the radar. I think he's playing well. I'll be curious to see, you know, if Reggie's still not with it, Jalen's role increasing a little bit, especially with Desi kind of struggling from three. Like, he's continued to struggle from three a little bit. And then, you know, I think I've just about covered everything, but Isaiah maybe kind of get back on track. Two of nine?
2 of 9 from 3-point range. 2 of 9
from three. Yeah, so we'll see if he can bounce back a little bit. He had been playing so well leading into that game, like averaging almost 20 points a game. So I think those are the keys. It's just the keys are what got you beat at LSU. You just got to, you know, box out, take care of the ball, and let your players make plays.
Ask for one key, and Scotty gives us the entire
– I threw the entire book at you.
That's okay. That's why you come here into the basketball podcast of Mid-America. A little teaser here. I talked to Nick Suss. He's a writer for the Clarion Ledger.
Nice.
And on the Whole Hog podcast, if you're listening to the basketball podcast of Mid-America, just flip on over. If you're subscribed to us, you also got the Whole Hog podcast in your subscription box. Go to play now. Play that podcast. First of all, there's some fantastic conversations on there this week with Tom Murphy as we reminisce over the past decade and what Tom wrote that he really wanted to expound on more. So go there.
That's going to be a really cool series.
It is. It is a start of a series. I'm going to go through and we're going to talk to each writer about his highlights of the decade, what stories that they wanted to really just tell you more information about, because there's only so much that can go into stories and into the words that you see and read, but there's also so much behind it. Mm-hmm. And so to get the guys and their perspective on, they were happening, some of the monumental moments of the last decade, you know, Tom Murphy had a front seat for. He was there for the entire 2018 College World Series, was on the sideline during the Hunter Heave. He covered the Razorback victory that sent him to the Sugar Bowl. All that stuff is on the Whole Hog podcast.
I've seen a lot. He's covered it all very well.
Make sure to go over and listen to that. But we talked to Nick. I talked to Nick Suss from the Clarion Ledger, and he said one key is going to be watch when Ole Miss has to start subbing. He said that Ole Miss starts off, even the first half, they haven't been really great. And then the second half, they've been able to come back. He said, but when Ole Miss starts subbing, he said around like the 15-minute mark all the way to the 10-minute mark, when Ole Miss has other guys on the court, they're, I can't remember his exact stat, but they are way in the negative on scoring margin.
Interesting. Okay.
So make sure to...
Maybe not bench depth.
Yes.
Does it sound great?
And so make sure to keep an eye out on that if the game is close right there. And if Arkansas, you know, Arkansas doesn't have great bench depth either, but if they can take advantage of when Ole Miss has to sub and expand their lead 6, 8, 10 points, then that's a huge key in this game. So I'd watch out for that. All right. Well, thank you for joining us here on the basketball podcast of Mid-America. We took a long break. The holidays got to us.
Good to be back.
But it is. Isn't it good to be back? We're going to have these podcasts for you all throughout basketball season. And there's multiple sellouts coming up. As you said, Scotty, a Kentucky game coming up. I think even though the basketball team lost, they're still exceeding expectations. And there's still
tons of excitement. Yeah.
There's still a lot of buzz around this team.
Yeah. Arkansas goes into Ole Miss and wins, then Arkansas plays Vandy, I think, on Tuesday or Wednesday next week. That'll be a fun crowd, too, because I think students will be back.
Yes, students are back on Monday.
And then big recruiting weekend for Arkansas for that Kentucky game. That's going to be lively, just like almost regardless of what happens between now and then. But we'll see if Arkansas can, you know, continue to play well, fight. And, you know, I'm eager to see this five-guard lineup wreak some more havoc. So,
all right, thanks for joining us once again. We'll be back next week to break down all of the Razorback action. But until then, have a great weekend.